lawsuit. Some of them we've been fighting over for over a decade. And yes, there will be more. There's so much more left to know about this program, and it's essential that we know about it now.
Dror Ladin, we want to thank you for being with us, staff attorney at the ACLU National Security Project Council in the FOIA case that led to the release of the CIA documents, as well as in the ACLU suit against Mitchell and Jess and the two psychologists who designed the CIA torture program. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has three job openings, an office coordinator, news producer, and a senior video news producer. Go to our website at democracynow.org and apply immediately.
All right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Next up is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. But first, I need to tell you that this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Art of Living presenting Get Happy Portland, a two-day immersive experience of breathing techniques and meditation by global humanitarian Sri Ravi Shankar. Get Happy Portland takes place July 5th and 6th at the Oregon Convention Center. Tickets and information are available at gethappyportland.org. And also, the Oregon County, the Oregon Country Fair, July 8th, 9th, and 10th, featuring music, food, and crafts in Vineta, Oregon. Admission and parking tickets are available only at TicketWest, as absolutely no tickets will be sold at the fair site. Directions to this family event and information on the shuttle at Valley River Center, available online at OregonCountryFair.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2016 Juneteenth Oregon Celebration, Saturday, June 18th. The Clara People's Freedom Trail Parade begins at 10:45 a.m. starting on Northeast 8th in Jarrett, continuing south on Martin Luther King Boulevard and west on Russell. It will end at the Juneteenth Oregon Celebration at Legacy Emanuel Field at Northeast Graham in Vancouver at noon. The celebration will be from noon to 7 p.m. and feature family fun and activities, community vendors, music and other live entertainment, and much, much more. Again, that's the 2016 Juneteenth Oregon Celebration, Saturday, June 18th, with the parade from 10:45 to noon and a celebration from noon to 7 p.m. at Legacy Emanuel Field at Northeast Graham in Vancouver and Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On Progressive Spirit, Krista Tippett of NPR's On Being gets personal and talks about her book, Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and art of living. She says journalism is sophisticated at exposing catastrophe.
And by contrast, a very primitive toolkit and even vocabulary for exposing goodness.
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world you cast your vote.
Good morning. It's about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting. Here we are on your very own community radio station. That is KBOO Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are together once again.
In another Down the Rabbit Hole edition of Positively Revolting.
Just when you think, wow, this society is really violent and messed up and what the hell? It just sort of seems to turn in on itself and get a little worse. So last week we were talking about rape culture, and we were talking about how violence, especially violence against women, you know, is not treated particularly seriously in this country, as demonstrated by the Brock Turner, he's a rapist, not a swimmer, debacle of last week, the sentencing of the rapist for a few months in jail because we don't want to really, you know, hurt his future much.
Discretionarily by the judge, he was convicted
right.
by the jury.
Right. Right. Good point. Fair. Thank you. And then, I don't know, 2 days after that show, we see the horrific incident of mass murder at the Pulse Queer Dance Club in Orlando. And not just on any night, but on Latina night, right? So a concentration of gay, lesbian, bi, transgendered, queer people gathered together, celebrating, hey, it's Pride, right? It's Pride Month, all manner of Pride events. Come on out and be our fabulous queer selves. And somebody, Omar Martin, to be exact, decided to go and start shooting. And Lynn and I ponder, are these things really unrelated? Because I don't think they are. I think that at the heart of them, we find fear-based masculinity. We find an extremely warped idea of what it means to be man. We find entitlement. We find a lot of similarities.
Well, you know, and what means to be man is changing big time, and that is horrifying. People don't know. Well, you know, it's hard for any of us to know who we are and where we stand, but without knowing who you are at all. So there are untold amounts of men who have no idea who they are and are floundering in the midst of change.
Yeah. I think that's a fair statement. And so how can we help each other through these times? One, how do we help each other through these times without falling into despair? And when I say help each other, I mean really reaching out to each other and saying, you know, stay present. Don't become an ostrich. That's not going to help. We love you, right? How can we practice our love? How do we put that into actual tangible practice now? And how do we help guys wrestle into this change? And really, how do we help everyone break out of socialized gender role conformity? Because those two extreme boxes of what it is to be masculine and what it is to be feminine fit very, very, very few people. Most of us.
Like no one?
Yeah, you know, I
totally
have a hard time believing it would fit anyone, but I believe that the humans are an amazing species with great variation. So maybe there's somebody out there that fits the extreme, you know, naturally and without any socialization that would embody that, but I doubt it. So how do we help to break ourselves out of enforced gender role conformity, of that toxic masculinity that says that might makes right, and that, you know, if you've got an opinion, you can use your might to enforce it on others, because that's what we're seeing a whole lot of.
Scared? Get a gun.
Yeah. There's so much to say about that and gun culture in this country. And why is it that people want AR-15s to, why do we buy those?
Well, they're little and you can get them in anywhere.
There's so much to say. But one thing I want to make sure we say is that at no point should tragedy, like this mass murder, at no point should that be used as a rallying cry for furthering the police state, eroding more civil liberties, increasing snooping and surveillance, and let it also never be used to fan the flames of Islamophobia. And
you're no fun.
That xenophobia, that othering, right? Because that's why shooters shoot, right? They're other. They're not, oh, actually, when you read profiles, there's some similarities between the shooters. But they're not really othered from many other people in this society. So what do we do? It gets back to that toxic masculinity. You know, a lot of the shooters have had a history of being, how do we say, not dealing with women very well. From domestic violence to the, oh gosh, I swore I was going to look up this guy's name before I got on the air this morning, and I didn't. But if we recall, a couple years ago, there was that rich kid in California, I think, that just kind of went around shooting some beautiful women because he was rejected. Remember him?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should look him up. Like,
I'll be looking him up any minute now. But there were so many little tales on this story, if you will, that it's hard to even know where to start to unknot it. One of the places I want to look at is homophobia and transphobia and the part that that plays in violence directed towards our community. So, you know, for new listeners to the show, I identify as queer. Queer as heck, as we say on the radio. Therefore, I'm going to be using a whole lot of us this morning. I'm sort of an inclusive kind of person at this moment in my life. I also want to point out that it is Pride Weekend in Portland. It is the celebration of queerness and all things from the LGBTQIA communities. And the parade is on Sunday, the big parade.
The big parade, right.
The parade for all is at 11 o'clock on Sunday the 19th.
What a great time to have this happen. Folks need a parade right now. And
well, we just be together.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Be together, have a parade, and just don't bring your guns. That's all we're saying.
Thanks, Lynn. The official Trans Pride March is actually tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. The North Park blocks on Northwest 8th and Davis is the gathering area for that. June 18th, 2 to 4:30 p.m. Let's go ahead and also invite you to join in this conversation. Oh, dear listener, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And look at that. Thank you, Engineering Pixie, and Googling Maven. She has pulled up the facts. Elliot Roger is the man's name, killed 6 people, injured 14 others near campus in University of California, Santa Barbara, before taking his own life. That's the guy I was thinking of. Right, 503-231-8187. Also, I want to encourage you to follow along on Facebook, where we post many an article throughout the week. You can find us there, Positively Revolting. You can also follow us in the Twitterverse, at Positive Revolt.
And a Huffington Post reporter, Melissa Jeltson, wrote last year, "The untold story of mass shootings in America is one of domestic violence." That is also with the man in Florida. I don't want to use his name too many times because I don't want him, that he doesn't get that anymore. That he was not reported for domestic violence. Now, he could have gotten a gun. It would have been harder for him to get that gun had he been convicted of domestic violence.
Yeah, the article Lynn actually shared with me earlier this week from the Rolling Stone website actually is it's a great, great article, I got to say.
Sorora Chumley?
It points out, the Washington Post reported...
Chumley, rather.
Excuse me. The Washington Post reported that although family members had say that this guy, that Mateen, had expressed anger about homosexuality. The shooter had no record of previous hate crimes. The author of the article then says, but that depends on how you actually categorize domestic violence. He says that a co-worker of Mateen's requested a transfer so that he wouldn't have to work with him and described him as scary in a concerning kind of way. He had anger management issues. Something would set him off, but those things that would set him off were always women, race, or religion. Those were his button pushers. I'll just read a little bit more because I think this point cannot be underscored enough. Mateen reportedly beat his ex-wife, at one point held her hostage, was never held accountable, just as Lynn said. She divorced him after only 4 months of marriage, citing mental health issues. Her family pulled her out of his arms to get her away. She describes Mateen as practicing his religion, but showing no sign of violent radicalism. The article goes on to say it's understandable what she means, but it's time, perhaps, our society started to think of physical abuse, possessiveness, and men's entitlement to act in those ways toward women as violent and as terroristic and radical. And I want to, again, just really throw myself in there and say, not about radical Islam, but that those acts, just in and of themselves, committed by any guy, right?
And that still,
it's time to really think of those as violent acts, right? As an act of domestic terrorism.
Right. And that domestic violence needs to not be a secondary category, and one that is harder to prove. I believe rape often falls into that category as harder to prove than anything else because something happens at home, still making women or a person's partner their property.
Exactly so. And that is, you know, it's like, oh, well, that happens behind closed doors. You know, the state shouldn't interfere in family matters. And there's, you know, some of me that says, yeah, the state shouldn't interfere, period. Because I'm not really a statist. But that leaves it to who? That leaves it to our communities. It leaves it to each other, you know, to really understand how to step in. And since we don't have that training yet, A, let's get it. And B, you know, let's actually figure out a way to deal well and effectively with men who decide that they need to keep the little woman in line by beating her and other things. What are the causes of domestic violence? Well, we've talked about that before, you know. And again, a lot of it goes down to insecurity and fear and being raised in a culture where right makes, where might makes right. And since you're a man, you'd best act like one. And acting like a man is some sort of like Chuck Norris married to John Wayne. They have a love child and then you pump it full of steroids. That's acting like a man, apparently, in our society
man
at
up.
This time.
Man up.
Right. 503-231-8187.
And we would love to hear from women this morning, some of their stories and how they feel about what we're talking about today.
But in the meantime, good morning, Camillo. You're on the air.
I want to announce the location at the Gay Pride March on Sunday for social activists, particularly people who are supporting health care reform.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Section 139 with Pride at Work, and it's located between Davis and Everett, and we're meeting there at 11. Please wear your red shirts and whatever rainbow paraphernalia you have, and I'm just inviting all social activists, labor-involved activists who want to support Gay Pride and to join with Healthcare for All Oregon and Jobs with Justice Healthcare Committee that will be there and walking proudly with the Gay Pride support.
Thanks very much for that information. And so, again, the parade gathers. You have to kind of be there by about 10:30 if you're just going to join into the parade and any of the contingencies. The contingents have to be there way earlier than that. And the parade steps off promptly at 11 o'clock. So Davis and Everett, you say, Camilo. All right. Thank you. Thank you so very much for that information. And, yeah, let's go ahead. 503-231-8187. is the number to call. Good morning, Johnny. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Ani.
Good morning.
I just want to say props. First of all, I want to say props and thank you for this amazing show that you're doing and raising the awareness. Secondly, I have just a short little story. I am in a man's body, and I recognize as I have a woman's conscious. I more often feel feminine than masculine, and it's a balancing act at that. And I have been in abusive relationships before in the past with my feminine partner, who was had more masculine attributes. As I believe that she was raised by mostly men and taught how to be a man. However, and that was really, and I am still working on finding a place of peace with that. And but you brought it to my attention that I have questions, like internal questions, that I haven't known how to ask in the past until you and Lynn started bringing up certain subjects. And so it came on to me to call and to ask you if you could maybe touch base on that topic of questions that we the people should be asking, you know, for clarification in like all matters of society, in especially including, you know, the LGBT community and identification and things of that nature. I just want to ask you to try and elaborate on types of questions that we can ask.
Yeah, I think that, because really, I'm personally in a really questioning stage. Thanks, Johnny. Oops. Thanks very much for your call this morning. I'm in a stage of having a whole lot of questions and really not very many answers. And maybe that's okay. Maybe answers make things a little too easy. Maybe there aren't any easy answers to be had. Things are kind of complicated. Some of those questions, right? Some of those questions. So it's been put out there that that the shooter was struggling with his own sexuality. He had frequented this club before. He may have had some gay hookup sites on his phone. And we know that sometimes people who commit horrific acts of violence against the queer community are actually acting out a self-hatred or projecting self-hatred because they cannot come to terms with their sexuality themselves. And so, if this is possibly one of the factors, I don't think there's a single factor in this case, I really don't. If this is one of those factors, then what does that say about how members of the queer community are still vilified and demonized? Because a lot of us think, whoa, we can get married now, right? We can serve in the armed forces, which God knows both of those things were always number one on my concern. but okay, you know, but we've achieved. There's television shows that have us as characters. We, you know, we got through the first on-air kiss, like, you know, 25 years ago or something. So we're on it. I mean, Ellen, for God's sakes, right? And yet, especially during this election campaign, you know, especially by the far right and the fundamentalist Christian community, there's been anti-queer legislation by the bucket full, and we can get a little bit more into some specifics of that, introduced in the last year. Because why? Because we're dangerous, we're perverts, and we really shouldn't have any of these rights that somehow or another we've managed to sneak out of the rest of society, which is obviously going the way of Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, so what is that? Right? Can we just address the fact that we are still a deeply homophobic society and that, you know, being able to serve in an imperialist force and being able to be chattel property really may not have achieved everything we wanted it to, but we sure are getting a backlash from those gains. And so there's that. Why did he choose to shoot up a disco on Latino night? Co-workers, associates say that he idolized the NYPD. And we know that the NYPD has some issues with blacks and Latinas. But, you know, there's some, we also know that he, you know, race was one of his hot buttons, and he would go off in racist ways, according to associates. So is that significant? I mean, I really think that you can't overlook that. And to overlook it is erasing the reality of, you know, 49 people who are now dead, most of whom were, in fact, Latino.
Puerto Rican, as a matter of fact.
Mostly. And so those are a couple of things. There's so much more. Go ahead, Lynn.
And he was of Southeast Asian descent. Hmm? So, Afghans are, I can't remember what part, but it's
now.
Asian. But it's Asian. Which is Northeast Asian.
His parents were immigrant.
Yeah. I mean, he had that... he obviously looked like an Afghan, which are, Afghan men are like incredibly beautiful. So what was his racial issue? I don't know.
I don't know. This is all. Do we need to talk about George Zimmerman? I mean, because really, we could, but I won't.
Right.
I also have the question of why does anyone need an AR-15? And violent outbursts. It makes me really wonder why he's able to get an AR-15. And I just had to start thinking about it. And then I had to look up what an AR-15 is because I'm not really a gun girl. And I go, whoa, why does anyone need an AR-15?
Only to do mass shootings, as far as I can see.
Well, there's an interesting Facebook post that I'm going to get into a little later about that.
You can make that gun small and take it with you, and it's just perfect.
For these situations. Uh-huh. 503-231-8187, the number to call. We have a lot of questions. We're doing a lot of emoting. I also want to encourage us to totally love each other, right? And this is a time of trauma. It's also a time of healing. And how do we get about to do that? We'd love to talk to you about it. Good morning, Jed. You're on the air.
Hey, I proclaim and say that we're here and forevermore. That the term lone wolf should be replaced with either the word slug or the term whale turd.
All right, Jed, good idea. Thank you very much.
That's not
wolves
really...
are fine. There's nothing wrong with a wolf.
Bye.
Thanks, Jed. Thanks for hanging on with that. Lone slug. Yeah, all right. Okay. I'm fond of slugs. But yeah, I get your point. You know, one thing sounds kind of cool, and being a mass shooter is not. Kind of cool.
You know, and I still see that these issues are all still in the bottom of the American psyche, and they have to come up and out before they can be dealt with. I don't think people should be shot. I don't think...
Thanks.
In any way, shape, or form, I'm not condoning violence. I'm just saying I see... Bill Moyers just wrote an article about, now he's, there's a lot of just blaming Donald Trump for everything, but he talks about Trump, his virus, and the dark age of unreason. He says there's a virus infecting our politics right now, and it's politics. You could say our society right now, and it's flourishing with scarlet heat. It feeds on fear, paranoia, and bigotry. All that's required for it to spread was a timely opportunity and an opportunist with no scruples.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what do you have to say? 503-231-8187. Right. So maybe I do want to just mention a couple of things. There's Che Brendis Tuca is a scholar and has a human rights campaigner and organizer. And has written a couple of things also sort of questioning where things are at, what things are, why things are happening. After a couple of days of reports and testimonies, he says, we know the following about the Orlando shooter. We know that he was a child of immigrants born and raised in the U.S. We know that he has, at different times, pledged allegiance to Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. And that these three organizations are de facto at war with each other, showing that he was ignorant about all three. Let alone Middle East politics in general. He also points out that he knew practically nothing about Islam, according to his family, wasn't particularly religious. Actually, Brandis Tuka writes that he was not religious in the slightest. I've read conflicting reports, but nothing has actually said that he was, a fundamentalist, fervent, true believer of any kind. A lot of folks sort of are secular practitioners of their, you know, religions, of their faiths.
Well, I think he was all over the place on many issues.
Yeah, exactly. That's the picture I get, is this guy who really kind of had no center, right? And I think that is actually a huge part of our problem. That's a huge part of the problem of violence in our society, is when you don't know who you are and you have pretty much unlimited access to really heavy weapons.
That was the next thing I was going to say. Yes.
It's that combination,
man.
That is
not a good combination.
It's that combination. I don't know who I am. I'm confused. I'm scared. I've got a lot of weapons that can shoot off rounds really fast, 45 a minute. Let's go.
We all project. The projection is something that can be positive or negative. And someone who doesn't know who they are, projecting like crazy on other people with a gun, it sounds like one of the worst. That is one of the worst volatile cocktails
ever.
Ever.
Right. Where do we go with this? What do we do? And how do we come through it? How do we help each other heal? How do we, in fact, start to heal our society? How do we do this? So
don't look at me.
Come on, Lynn.
She's looking at me. Let's see. Number one.
I was hoping I could come to you this morning, sit at your feet, and just come on, wisdom. Okay, all right. Maybe that's not going to happen, but I trust. You know, I want to point out we have somebody who has commented on our Facebook page. And you could too. You can find us there, Positively Revolting on Facebook. John says the FBI was able to spot a messed up kid and groomed him, fed him weed, taught him to build a bomb, gave him everything he needed to build it, talked him into pressing the button, albeit non-functioning, arrested him, and convicted him over 3 years. I believe that's the case of Muhammad in Portland.
Yeah. He was the test case.
Yeah. But John adds, but they couldn't see red flags all over this guy? Really? I think Teresa Mitchell yesterday during Press Watch, happy birthday, Teresa Mitchell. I believe Teresa Mitchell yesterday during Press Watch pointed out that he's got a lot of hallmarks of somebody who may in fact be groomed to do something like this. Sort of a Manchurian candidate sort of scenario, if you will. I don't know. I think a lot of things are worth pondering. And I think that when you have somebody who is so messed up internally, you know, who is so conflicted about so many things and who has anger issues, they're pretty easy to manipulate. That's something that I think I can say with pretty good assuredness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good morning, Thomas. Let's go ahead and talk to you. Good morning, Thomas. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Yeah, I just been thinking, like most people, a lot about this situation with this shooting and different angles and ways of looking at it, and it is just pretty ugly that the main media focus judges to the, you know, runs to look at the opportunistic statements that allegedly ISIS spokespeople made to take advantage of the crisis, and of course this lost soul, you know, this gentleman let's leave the word gentle out of it.
Really? Fair enough.
Who has serious problems, and of course you have all the stereotypes. You know, you have the sort of bootlicking worship of power and authority, and an aimlessness, and a lack of people that have a lack of place in society, a lack of center. But another thing I keep thinking about too is. I know this hits so close to home, being here in the United States, when we talk about, guns getting into the hands of people who are unstable and violence culture. And I'd say, I wish sometimes also we were as exercised by the fact that the United States is the largest arms merchant on the planet.
Yep.
And indeed, the by hook or by crook, the predominant Democratic candidate now, when Hillary Clinton, in her capacity as Secretary of State, personally, you know, and we like to celebrate all of her. She goes and does a lot of pink washing with, tokens of support for LGBT people. So now I guess, you know, people who are, you know, lesbians can drive a tank into battle or whatever victory that is in the army or what have you. But, you know, all of these sort of symbolic and to what extent real issues for gay people. And of course, the imagined victory of a female candidate being the run-up nominee for president. And yet we have somebody who quarterbacked the single largest arms sales in the history of the planet as Secretary of State to Saudi Arabia. And I would wonder what a gay person in Saudi Arabia or let's say in Bahrain or any of these other protectorates or how are women treated, you know, in these countries. I think the thing is that when we look at these horrible and tragic and certainly important manifestations of U.S. The violence. Mm-hmm. We should think about the absolute, the wholesale, you know, and not lose the fact that it become normalized that people that we celebrate as being somehow champions, ironically enough, as women, you know, or somehow being exemplary of yeah. the success of women, actually can be the largest purveyors of violence.
I'm gonna sort of jump in here for a second, Thomas. I think that your point that looking at the U.S.'s role in the world stage as you know, really a largely violent force whose economy has had in large part, you know, we're based in the military-industrial complex, and we are a large part of our economy depends on global arms sales. And we are, in fact, the global armorer, right, as you're pointing out. And so when you look at our society and you see that, in fact, we have about the most lethal society in the world,
Or as Donald Rumsfeld said, I know they have weapons of mass destruction. I've got the receipts.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like macrocosm, microcosm, right?
It's even more than that. I think it's more fundamental. I mean, we're so quick often to celebrate what are often symbolic and very superficial victories or imagined victories, either by, you know, let's say for women's rights, by women getting into high office in this country to the extent that they do, and largely they don't, but to the extent that they do, we celebrate it. You know, we have someone like a Madeleine Albright who was on the record as saying that the something like 500,000 children that died
in Iraq,
during the 90s due to the sanctions, due to starvation and deprivation of medical. Now, these are acceptable. So what I'm saying is that we need to remember that this is a lot larger thing and not be so narcissistic that to think that the depredations of this type of violent culture are only affecting the United States. We're responsible for all of it, and we can't let ourselves be swayed and charmed because Hillary Clinton happens to show up to a few gay pride events here and there, etc. This is just opportunistic posing, and we need to be able to separate that out in our minds.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call this morning. It's really important to look at people's whole history, their context, their track record, much of it when they come to high public offices, much of that track record is, in fact, very visible. And it behooves us to do that kind of analysis rather than go, well, that one kind of looks like me, I'll vote for it. No, that doesn't really get us a whole lot of places. Now, if you look at the history and you look at the track record and you make the earnest belief that, yes, this is the candidate that best represents you and your interests, cool. Can't argue with you. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't, but I wouldn't on the air. So that's the one thing I do have to say, though. Anytime somebody says you have to vote for this person because this is who they are, this is the community they come from, you know, whether they're a woman, whether they're a person of color, whatever it is, I just have to think of Margaret Thatcher and Madeleine Albright. Those are the two people. I don't know so much about her role. I don't. I look at Thatcher and Albright because I know them. And not so good, not so pleasant. 503-231-8187.
And you know, in Australia, many years ago, And they're, you know, they're a cowboy culture. They like guns. They had an incident, and assault weapons were completely banned. People, their version of the NRA was very upset for a while and told people, don't pay attention to it. But they have not had an incident like that since then. I was listening to what the president was saying about this. Well, you know, this is just horrible, and I just wish there was something we could do about it. When he could have made an executive order, of course everybody would have hated it. They hate what he does. Many people hate what he does. There were a couple of Democrats that filibustered, and this would have been a perfect time to just end those weapons. It could have been done.
How many times does he get to go on the air? How many times does he get to address the American public?
Really, it's good, like, if we could do something about this.
How many times does he get to do this after a mass shooting, which are happening on average about every 2.5 months? How many times does he get to do this and say,
oops.
Oh, I hope and pray I don't have to address the American public again. I hope and
well, it'll be over soon.
Yeah, it's going on, right? And there are tangible things that can be done about it. And stopping the sale of assault rifles seems like a fair
start. It's a really good start.
I want to point out that, a Facebook friend shared with me a post yesterday, from somebody who decided to go into their local gun store in Southwest Portland to ask about AR-15s. He says he didn't go in to berate, but to try to understand why his store sells such weapons. He said he asked the sales folk, the clerks, and they were a little jittery, but tried to answer his questions. So the dude says, I'm trying to learn about AR-15s and why an ordinary citizen would want one. Why do people buy them? The clerk says, most people use them to shoot cans and stuff. So the dude says, you have to be a very bad shot to need that kind of gun to shoot cans. I mean, I did just fine with my PB gun and my dad's .30-06 deer hunting rifle. I didn't need 45 rounds a minute. The second clerk says, well, they're good for shooting coyotes and groundhogs because those little suckers really move fast. Dude says, it seems to me that AR rifles are nearly all you have here except for handguns. Clerk says, yeah, they're our most popular. Guy says, surely everyone that's buying them isn't hunting coyotes and groundhogs and tin cans. I mean, first of all, I'd got to say, I never really noticed a huge groundhog problem in Portland.
Rats, maybe.
Yeah, you know, but my dad shot a sewer rat with a rifle when he was in his 20s. I'm just going to say,
a BB gun
can be done. It's a great family story. I tell you what, it's the only time my dad ever used a gun. Okay. The clerk at the store says, well, they're good for wild pigs in Texas. I hear they're a real problem in some parts there. Man asking the question says, but we don't have wild pigs in Portland. So again, why do people buy these types of guns? Well, some of them are for protecting their families and property. Protecting them from whom? I don't know. It's just what they say. Guy says, have you ever had someone you loved killed by a gun? And I don't mean while going out and hunting rabbits. Clerk says, no. The guy says, I have. He says, you are young, and the older you get, the more likely you are to lose a loved one. Whether you think they're killed by a gun or a person, you will discover that when they are dead. I'm sorry. Whether you think they are killed by a gun or killed by a person, you discover that they are dead. What would happen to you if you stopped selling AR rifles? Both clerks affirmed that they'd go out of business. So the guy says, so it's really about the money? And the clerk says, yeah. So he leaves, and he says that as he was headed to the car in the parking lot, he was approached by another guy. And he says, oh, you know, those clerks were lying. They sell the guns to people to protect themselves for when they come. The guy says, who's the they? Zombies? Like, are we now arming for the zombie apocalypse? Because I've seen Walking Dead. You know,
guns don't really help with that.
No. We all know from Night of the Living Dead.
Guns aren't going to help you with the zombies.
Beat them or burn them, they go up pretty easy. That's the zombie cure, okay? For the zombie apocalypse, you don't need AR-15s. Guy says, yeah, he says, that and all the others who might try to steal your food after an earthquake or take your guns or imprison your family members. So the fellow says, is that something that really concerns you? And the guy says, yeah, that's the way this country's been going these last, you know, 7 years. Guy says, you mean since we got a black president? Fellow in the parking lot says, well, not just that, but look at all the Muslims and the immigrants streaming across the border. I have six ARs and plenty of ammo. Questioner says, but you can only shoot one gun at a time. Guy says, yeah, but I bet I feel a lot safer than you do. Guy says, no, I'm not afraid of hordes of zombies, blacks, Mexicans, or Muslims coming after me and my family. I'm more afraid of going out dancing, going to church, going to the movies, or going to school where people are likely to be shot. Guy says, no, those are pretty safe places. And that was the end of that conversation. The writing goes on at length. It's a really, really well-written piece. I want to thank him, who I don't know him, for writing it. Thank you, Buckley. Just wanted to share that because I think, you know, gun control and gun culture, it's a topic that's huge, and it's a topic I've actually never done a show on. In 22 years, it's about the only raging controversial topic that I have actually made a decision in my life to say, you know, a lot of other people are arguing about that. And I actually can see arguments all around that. I personally don't like guns. I personally have never shot one. I hate loud noises. I can't pop a balloon.
Get
okay?
a silencer then.
Oh, great, Lynn. I don't think that's what you mean to say to me. I mean, truthfully, I can't pop a balloon. I can't. So that said, I also know other people who have very, very good rationale for why they want to have a gun. And I'm not going to, you know, it's like, okay, I can see that and I can see that rationale. I don't actually think all guns should be outlawed. And then I go, but what kind of weapons do we sell to regular people without background checks or any other kind of, what? In a violent and sick and disintegrating end-stage capitalistic society, we go through guns like...
Pretty messy, huh?
Like, yeah, like tennis shoes.
Yeah, pretty messy.
It's just, you know, we don't need semi-automatics, right? We just don't. We don't need automatics.
Or automatics.
We just don't.
They are only for killing people.
Yeah. And where's that going to stop? You want a pocket nuke? I'd like, you know, we want pocket nuke, six designer
don't,
colors,
don't
collect
put
the
that
whole
out
set.
There. That will be the next thing coming.
Okay. All right. I want a daisy cutter, damn it. Where's my daisy cutter? I want to protect the dead-end street I live on with a daisy cutter.
I am sure you can find one.
We know, actually, you're probably right. All right, go ahead, Lynn. What do you have there?
Well, coming up on KBOO this morning at 9 on Veterans Voice, hosts Marv and Angie of Northwest Vets for Peace speak with three vets from the group Veterans Challenge Islamophobia. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today, and we'll hear flashpoints with features on the continuing violence against the indigenous communities of Honduras, a federal raid on a California medical cannabis dispensary, and the launch of a global petition to protect Edward Snowden from U.S. persecution. At 11, Michelle Schroeder Fletcher speaks with Jana Bitten of the Oregon Center for Nursing and Christopher Wallace of the Oregon Student Nurses Association about the Oregon Action Coalition and the future of nursing. At 11:30, Jenka Soderberg interviews Israeli activist Dalit Baum about boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS. And I would like to thank all of you KBOO members for your generous support. We couldn't do it without you. Not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. It's easy, it's peasy. And another thing, get our mobile app.
Oh, yeah.
For your Smarty Pants phone. It is great. You can check out archive shows, see what's coming up. It's new, it's improved, it's really good. And you can get it on whatever device you have, whatever their store is, because I learned that everything is not iTunes the other day, so.
There's a whole world out there,
apparently,
Lynn.
So.
A whole world.
So.
This is one of our eternal struggles. Let's go ahead and talk to Anna Doyne, shall we?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to make a quick comment and piggyback off what the last caller said. I agree absolutely that it's no mark of progress for women or LGBTQA people to take a part and participate in imperialism. And also I wanted to note that from what I understand, a lot of, most of the people who were killed in the massacre were Puerto Rican. And I think it's also a chance for us to show solidarity with people all around the world that deal with situations like this a little bit more often by the hands of imperialism the U.S. causes. And also the fact, the economic violence that caused a lot of people to come here in the first place from Puerto Rico. Like right now, from what I understand, Puerto Rico is dealing with situations where they're not allowed democratically to deal with their debt, and they're being forced to take on a massive amount of debt, which causes economic problems and, of course, leads people to look elsewhere for opportunities, which I imagine had a lot to do with why so many people come in the first place, because of the economic violence and the actual violence caused by imperialism. So I just wanted to kind of draw those links and, to also just agree with the last caller. So that was it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. 503-231-8187, the number to call.
Like Dennis did.
Yeah, good morning, Dennis. You're on the air. Dennis, unfortunately, we had an error. We had an error in button pushing. Dennis, call back. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And also, I do want to encourage you to like us on Facebook. Check out all the things throughout the week that we post. And also, go ahead and follow us on Twitter while you're at it, at Positive Revolt. I can also say, so this, I can only deal with horror, despair, grief, and that kind of stuff so much. And then I have to do something, come together with others, actually look at other times of great oppression that communities have struggled hard to get through and still exist despite all efforts to squash us and them. And it occurred to me that this weekend is really kind of a wonderful show of that. It's the Pride weekend. And of course,
that's what I was saying.
Pride weekend does start tonight. There's a glow run, 9:30 to midnight tonight, downtown. If you're interested in Pride events, the website is pridenw.org.
Don't do what I did and Google Portland Pride events. You will get Portland, Maine first, which...
Depending on...
And they're having a great weekend, too. I wouldn't...
Depending on how your search engine might go, but the actual address is PD... Right, Pride NW, Pride Northwest.
Yes.
PrideNW.org.
Keep Portland out of it.
And you can see the Glow Run. You can see the Pride Festival, which is happening throughout the week, throughout the weekend, I guess I should say, at Tom McCall's Waterfront Park, both Saturday and Sunday. There's the Trans Pride March, which is tomorrow at 2. There's the Portland Dyke March, tomorrow at 6. There is a Gaylabration that's at the Crystal Ballroom.
Gaylabrate, good times, come on.
That's at the Crystal Ballroom tomorrow night. And then, of course, the Pride Parade, 11 o'clock Sunday morning, June 19th, starts off from Burnside in Northwest Park. We had Camilo call earlier to say that the healthcare community, the organizers for healthcare, the Jobs with Justice, and others are assembling between Davis and Everett. So if you would like to, he was an open invitation to be with them. Between Davis and Everett, you'd want to get there probably by about 10:30. from my past experience with Pride Parade staging, you really want to be in place by about 10:30. So those are the things that are going on for Pride, but it's also the celebration of Juneteenth. And Oregon hasn't really had a celebration of Juneteenth until recently. Juneteenth started in Texas, and it was a celebration that actually ended, that marked the end of slavery in the state. And it has since spread throughout the South, and now it's actually making its way up to Oregon. I think this is like the, it's only been happening about 5 or 6 years, really, as an official celebration here. Maybe a little longer, but it's still a pretty recent addition. So the Juneteenth celebration and parade is happening tomorrow. And the celebration itself is happening at the Legacy Emmanuel Field. And that's at Northeast Vancouver and Graham. And I want to mention that because, you know, ending slavery, that's something to celebrate. Also making sure it doesn't come back because it's making some inroads. It certainly never went away globally. Certainly there's still a very horrific slave trade going on. But we need to, I think, really look at our own past, our racist legacy, the structural and institutionalized racism in this country. Looking at the legacy of slavery, looking at the huge, insurmountable debt owed, you know, to slaves and their descendants. And I think it's super important, again, to come together as community and to celebrate. And it's also the Delta Park Powwow Weekend, right?
It's jam-packed this weekend.
It's the Delta Park Powwow Weekend. And so
coming together events.
Again, this is... decades-old celebration started in the early 70s. And again, all Native peoples coming together in Delta Park for an encampment and powwow. And again, just looking at coming together with community. Right.
Let's take Suzanne real quick.
Let's.
Suzanne, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Susan.
Oh, Susan, sorry.
Hi. This is Susan. Hey, I was just following up. I thought I understood one of the two of you, I don't know who said this, but to comment about the president and why he had not issued an executive order to ban automatic weapons. And I'm not sure, could you kind of clarify it? Are you certain that that's something that he actually can do? I mean, I think there's some limits to what can be done under executive orders.
I don't know. And, we go to war.
Right. But if you're speaking about executive orders, what he can actually put in place and, you know, making comments, you know, critique that he had not done that, you can't do everything by executive order. And I don't know. I'm not saying he could or couldn't. But that may not be...
within his purview.
He could have put into place. Yeah. And I think I just want to... You know, I mean, if you're certain that that's something you can do, then I'm glad to hear that. But if you were just saying that and that's not something that you know for a fact, I just wanted to kind of put that out there for people.
Sure.
Maybe they can check it out. Because, you know, I think my sure. read on what I've heard the president say is that this is something that's very important to him and that, yes, he doesn't want this to have to come.
He sounds very helpless about it, and I think that there is more that he could do, is what I'm saying.
Well, you think that, but
okay, I got your point, and I thank you
very much.
And yeah, it's true. Lynn is not a legal scholar, and I think, however, her point. I'll go ahead and speak for you at this time. I realize that's awkward. You know, is really as the president. And as we know, previous presidents have done all manner of things with executive orders that may have been outside the purview of the limitations, right?
What the heck? He's a short timer.
There's a lot more that he could be doing. Whether it is actually an executive order, I don't know. But there's a lot more he could be doing.
He would probably be afraid of being assassinated if he did that. But
well, and I got to say, a lot of gun nuts, and I'm going to call them gun nuts, have gone on for a long time about how since this guy's in the White House, they're going to come and get our guns and put us all in encampments. Because why? Oh, because you're racist and you believe all this hoopla. You know, it makes my head spin. And I kind of look like Linda Blair in that Exorcist film when I start thinking about those rationales. So much hoopla. So much hoopla. All that said,
we've run out of show.
Good God, look at the time.
We're out of show.
We certainly are. So be strong. Be together. Love each other. Keep asking questions. fight homophobia? Really, the legislation that is coming fast and furious and the demonization of our communities has a whole lot to do with this. Come together, love each other, be safe, be strong. Don't give in to hate. And we'll see you next week.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Co-sponsor the 46th annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment taking place from Friday, June 17th through June 19th at Delta Park East in Portland. The 46th annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment is presented by the Bow and Arrow Culture Club. This year features competition dancing, exhibitions, arts, crafts, and food vendors, and much more. Grand entries take place Friday at 7, Saturday at high noon and 7 p.m., and Sunday at high noon. Again, that's the 46th Annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment, June 17th through June 19th at Delta Park East, 10774 North Union Court in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is